If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Patty Mills.
In honor of your Spurs shellacking the Miami Heat for the third time in four games.
Getting it done.
John Tesh.
Oh.
Making a strong entrance on the podcast.
I tell you what, doesn't that song just bring back great memories of our childhood in the 1990s?
Well, the Sixers never really did a whole lot, so...
They had Sean Bradley, Clarence Witherspoon.
They had Sean Bradley. Tyrone Hill. George Lynch. My guy AI back in 01. You know, the, the 14th anniversary of Iverson stepping over Tyronn Lue in game one of the finals was like 4 or 5 days ago.
Easily a top five NBA moment.
Oh, Tyronn Lue, now, how old we are, Tyronn Lue now interviewing for head coaching position.
Unbelievable. Just great. Just Iverson just nails a three, just steps right over him.
I remember playing that so smart growing up in suburban Philadelphia. Watched game one. They won. It was so jacked up. Didn't make it the rest of the series to watch the end of the games because I was so young. Turned out to be a really good decision because they lost the rest of the games
that's
in that series.
That's right. That's right. So, how terrible was that Sixers team around Allen Iverson?
They were terrible.
How did he take that team to the finals?
And Bucks fans always complain to me about this. They're like, refs screwed the Bucks, whatever. The Eastern Conference was such garbage. Eric Snow, Aaron McKee won sixth man.
Matt Geiger.
Geiger, Todd McCullough. They had Dikembe Mutombo. They traded Theo Ratliff for Dikembe Mutombo. That team
was
hot
the defensive
garbage.
Player of the year, I think. So
yeah, and then Shaq turned him into like a little schoolgirl that series. And then Larry Brown traded everyone from the roster in the offseason, and the 0-2 Sixers were even worse.
You know, it's just a shame that everybody, the general public, the general fan remembers Allen Iverson for the press conference, practice, not
right.
game.
He is the most beloved athlete in Philadelphia, bar none, no matter what he did. He had domestic violence issues. He released a rap album, if you remember that, which was just awful in quality and in what was inside of it. just berated by the media for how violent it was. No one remembers these things. He is so beloved in Philly.
He's 5'10", 5'11", and he just willed them.
No way, he's 6 feet tall.
Right, played with reckless abandon.
Yeah.
And granted, he probably shot 40 times a game, but
he had to.
The team
when Eric Snow is your second leading scorer, you don't have a lot of options. Kind of like your boy, Boris Diaw.
Boris Diaw.
You were boo-loving on Boris.
Oh, man, Boris. The YMC player from hell.
Oh,
that's
man.
What he is.
We got a great tweet asking if he is the fat Larry Bird.
Pretty much. I was going to go with, Michael Jordan.
Wow.
Maybe LeBron James. But
Laboris James.
Laboris.
Should we start calling him
Laboris
that? Laboris My only issue with that comparison is not fat Larry Bird, the real Great White Hope, only averaged about 25 more points a game.
Something good happens every time he touches the basketball. Last night was just
the Spurs are
total
the ball
domination.
Doesn't stick. It's just constantly moving. There were so many plays where it would go like Manu to Tony Parker to Diaw to Duncan, who's wide open under the basket. It was unbelievable.
You know, I was talking to my college roommate. He made a good point. We watched a lot of NBA, and he said, it must just really bother the Spurs, they watch the Heat's isolation ball when it kind of devolves into LeBron James or Dwayne Wade just doing their thing, and they're kind of playing that Euro style.
That's
everybody touches the ball. Such a class of style. They probably just really were looking forward to that.
I know we're getting not on Packers.
Right. We're 4 minutes in and we haven't even talked about Packers.
But I think it's so interesting all this Carmelo Anthony talk. They should spend that $15 million on three guys who are not dead to come off the bench. Why not sign three guys who are capable of doing more than one thing?
What was your line?
Rashard Lewis's carcass.
The carcass
for three.
Of Rashard Lewis for three.
Oh, my God. Get somebody who can do something. Like, Ray Allen does the same thing that Rashard Lewis does. Chris Anderson can only rebound and somewhat protect the rim. Spend that $15 million on three key contributors who can do something. I'm not a Heat fan. I'm just,
they need
somebody
who can dominate the ball and take the shot clock down to
that's
one
right.
second. That's what they need, man.
They only have Dwayne Wade. It's okay.
All right. Well, this is the Packers podcast at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm Tyler Dunn here again for podcast number three, right?
Yeah.
This is your third one, Dan?
Another spot start.
Another spot
start. Bob McGinn.
Dan Koob of NBC 26, back by popular demand.
It's true. I appreciate the comments, letters written. My last name is spelled with a B. Not with a P. It's not Coop. It's book backwards. It's
book
just
backwards.
That way when you're addressing these letters, I can receive
right.
them.
Right. Well, let's get right to, I mean, we're here at your apartment.
Yeah.
Riverside Condominiums.
Well, I thought we were going to save this for the end, but
let's get into it.
We can delve into this. If you listen to the last podcast, and I swear we'll get to some sort of Packers discussion. If you listen to the last podcast, my housing situation was up in the air. I was being unceremoniously booted by Riverside Condominiums. Cooler heads have prevailed thanks to our loyal listeners, those who tweeted in the power of the podcast. I have received word that we are not being kicked out.
The power of the podcast.
The power of the podcast. The podcast power.
So he listened in.
Well, I assume he was just berated through viewer,
right.
listener emails. Threats. I don't know. I have a very, you know, my fan base moves very well.
You are out right on the Fox River.
It's true. So I was informed that they are instead going to sell a different apartment. So thanks to him, and I apologize. I'll use this platform to apologize to whatever poor soul is having their apartment sold now. But it's not me.
It's not you.
So I don't have to live under same brand.
Right. If it's not you, it really doesn't matter. Right?
And your guest room will remain empty.
Open, empty. I'm just going to stare at it.
Let's just talk about the Packers.
Okay, today, for the Packers podcast, we will discuss Aaron Rodgers sat down with the quarterback for another summer Q&A. We've done this for 3 years now, I believe, and thought he really had some interesting things to say, from the injury to the fan reaction, his playing style, and really his relationship with Mike McCarthy, I think is pretty unique. We'll get into that. Got to talk OTAs. They're in shorts and helmets, Dan, not pads yet. You don't want to draw too many conclusions, but we'll talk about a couple players each that are standing out and or have something to prove there at Reinitschke Field. And we'll get into the running back situation,
yeah,
which suddenly is pretty deep for Green Bay. You know, 2 years ago, they're picking up car salesmen. They're picking up Ryan Grant.
20th in the league. They're barely skating by, and all of a sudden it's one of the strongest rooms on the roster.
Definitely, definitely. So that'd be interesting. You know, we can squeeze in a little more Boris Diaw talk.
We're in the business of giving the fans what they want.
And they
want more Boris. Can you name anybody? I don't want to devolve into more NBA talk. Can you name anybody named Boris that isn't successful?
I can't.
Even the guy from GoldenEye, whose name was Boris,
was
pretty good for half that movie.
I think that's going to be the name of my firstborn.
Boris Dunn.
Boris Dunn. Boris Dunn.
Wow. Born in 1950.
All right. First things first. Aaron Rodgers. Now, he's 30 years old, and
Boris,
I thought it was interesting that he brought up his age, you know, three different times to me. When we sat down, we talked for about 20 minutes. 30 years old, and this is suddenly a quarterback on the back nine of his career. I mean, it's hard to believe. It really does seem like it was just the summer of 2008. And
is he really? Peyton Manning, 38. Tom Brady, 37, 38. Brett Favre took a team to the NFC title game at 37, 38.
Well, I'm saying the back half of his career, but that's an interesting point. I think that, and we'll get into that with the playing styles, Brady and Manning, a little different than Aaron Rodgers in that regard, which is could make for good debate. But it does seem like, you know, I was out here as an intern covering training camp that summer, and I'll never forget, I mean, 8-9-year-old kids just screaming at Aaron Rodgers. You know, Brett Favre is trying to come back, and
The Packers don't want him. Aaron Rodgers is the starter, and the fans were not happy at family night. The inter-squad scrimmage at Lambeau Field, they're booing this guy. It's raining. Nobody knows that Aaron Rodgers is going to be, you know, a competent starter, let alone an MVP Super Bowl winner. So,
yeah.
You know, one of the interesting comments I thought out of that Q&A was when I asked Aaron, you know, when you came back out onto the field after fracturing your collarbone and the fans are really going wild, it was an unbelievable scene there. Kind of gives him the thumbs up. Were you thinking about family night of 08? Were you thinking about those practices when kids are cursing you out pretty much? And he said, yeah. He goes, that absolutely ran through my mind. It was one of the top moments of his career. He puts it right up there. And that evolution with the fan base is something I think that does mean a lot to him. That is pretty genuine. So, I mean, you read it. I guess what kind of stood out to you with Rodgers' comments?
And I'm not saying this because you're allowing me on the podcast. I think that's a great question because I don't think a lot of people would put one and two together. I wasn't here for that. I only hear stories about how he was booed. I don't think it's – when you're replacing a legend, when you're the next guy in line, I think that's – pretty commonplace, frankly, for a fan base to not agree with a managing decision, which is the older guy who's brought us a championship, who's accumulated so many stats, who's a certain Hall of Famer. We're moving on. You know, not only are the expectations bigger inside the locker room, but outside they're astronomical. So as far as him being booed, I don't know if that's out of the ordinary if you were to put that situation somewhere else. But I think we both. I would stop at saying no, Aaron, but I think you know how sensitive he is.
Yeah.
So I understand why he would feel that way.
I think it's out of the ordinary where it's not like he, missed a shot at the buzzer or, you know, he made some mistake. The guy didn't even play yet.
Right. He didn't even have a chance.
Just caught in the middle of this drama, and you know, he's kind of the easy target, the bullseye for a lot of these fans. And I mean, let's be honest. We get asked this question a lot from outsiders, people outside of Wisconsin, you know, why do people care so much about the Favre saga and everybody holding hands and singing Kumbaya and everybody coming together? Why is this such a big story? It's different here.
Yeah.
I mean, football is religion for people in this state.
You don't realize it unless you're in there.
Yeah. It's not like they can, you know, watch the Heat get thumped by 20 points and then go to the beach.
Right.
It's Packers.
Well, they can go to the lake, but... One of our mutual friends hates it when they call it the beach here.
They can catch a carp bottom feeder in the Fox River.
Do you have to throw it back, though?
I wouldn't need it.
But that river's got such a brown tinge to it.
It does.
I don't think, with apologies to Matt Hippus, our executive producer, it's just such a brown tinge. I don't think
it's a very brown tinge. No lie. No. Me and our pal Justin Fowler were fishing in the Fox recently, and I caught a pretty big smallmouth bass.
Yeah. I heard you killed it.
I was going to throw it back. He told you that. I was going to throw it back, and this guy next to me, I don't know how many teeth he had. He's like, you got to eat that fish. You got to eat it. I'm like,
maybe that's
I'm not going to eat this fish. I'm sorry. Not going to eat. All right. Where were we? Aaron Rodgers. Now, okay, so he suffers the injury. Really his first serious injury as the Packers starter. As you mentioned, he did have concussions before. Missed a couple weeks there. I think the question that kind of comes out of this that I wanted to ask him, does this make you tweak, change, alter your playing style? I mean, he's a quarterback who is at his best when he keeps plays alive, when he's evading the rush, when he's, you know, letting a play kind of break down. I mean, how many times do we see Randall Cobb just squirt free, find a gap, and they have a big play? I thought his answer was pretty interesting where, he does need to kind of tweak it. As you get older, when you're 30 years old, you become smarter. The concussions that he had did open his eyes to the fact that maybe if he's scrambling, you got to slide A, and maybe B, you just don't scramble as much. He said he was working with Alex Van Pelt, the new quarterback's coach, a lot about really going through those reads, going through those progressions. But look, this is what makes him different. I mean, this is what makes him different than a lot of the best passers in the league, his legs. If it was up to Ted Thompson, he said, yeah, he probably would be staying in the pocket more.
Yeah.
If it was up to Mike McCarthy, he'd be himself. It's going to be very interesting to see.
I read this, and it was very well done, and I think it all goes hand in hand. And obviously ESPN Wisconsin did one as well, which focused more on his personal life. I think they go hand in hand. I think if it's possible for Aaron Rodgers to be better, I think what you may be seeing is the next couple of years, he may really be hitting his peak, which is scary to say considering the stats he's put up. And I'm, you know, not a Packer backer. I don't want to blow smoke up as you know what. But I think Aaron Rodgers could be even better in this maturation process. Mm-hmm. He's now comfortable with everything that's going on. Obviously, football-wise, he knows the system. If he's going to be playing smarter, not taking as many chances. And he admitted to you, I believe, that he was rusty in Chicago, made him a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes, mm-hmm. stuff like that. If he is older, wiser, more comfortable with inside and outside of the building, I think he could play better.
Yeah.
As scary as that sounds. And I think he's a quarterback that it doesn't necessarily matter what wide receivers he has. James Jones, Greg Jennings, Donald Driver no longer there. He makes guys better. And, yeah, I know it's helmets and shoulder pads right now, little shoulder pads and shorts. But even talking to guys in the locker room, they say, like, we want to stick around so we can play with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
B.J. Raji said that. And he does not catch passes from Aaron Rodgers. This is a transcendent talent who makes people better.
I mean, look at last year. He makes problems go away. And when he's not on the field, it exposes a lot of problems on your team. Yeah. I mean, and they had a lot. Now, you know, I do think it is interesting. You look at Tom Brady, 15 seasons in the NFL.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning, he's going on his 17th season in the NFL. But these are two guys who, they stay in the pocket. And they don't take a lot of hits. You know, Brady, what, he tore his ACL. Guy kind of goes low on him. Think of how many really hits these guys have taken outside of the pocket. They're not outside of the pocket.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where being a smarter quarterback comes into play, whereas those guys are very based upon rhythm and the timing of the dropbacks and the routes and getting out of, you know, breaks. I think that plays to Rodgers' advantage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as he gets older, progresses in his age, he can become more of a pocket passer, but he still has the ability to extend plays. Obviously, when you think of a guy extending plays, the first person who comes to mind for me is Tony Romo. But Aaron Rodgers, footwork-wise, arm accuracy, arm, you know, throwing power-wise, superior to a guy like Romo. So if he can extend the plays but keep in mind that he doesn't have to run and get killed, I think that speaks to his longevity, and I think he'd become a better quarterback.
Yeah. Let's be honest. That's what makes him special. When you run back to his best plays, his highlights, it's when he's doing that kind of stuff. I guess it remains to be seen. I think it's open-ended. Steve Young, kind of a similar quarterback, somebody that Aaron Rodgers looked up to a little bit, likes to run. He can use his legs as a weapon. When I'm kind of looking at his numbers. I mean, he was a starter late in his career, a little later, but really just from 1991 to about 1998. So, you know, his window closed pretty quickly. Granted, I think he retired at 36, 37.
He had concussion issues,
and he had
too.
Concussion issues. Yeah, right. Big totally time. Different story there, but you know, I think another really interesting thing that kind of came out of our discussion with Aaron Rodgers was the relationship he has with Mike McCarthy. Mm-hmm. And the impetus for wanting to know about this is week three of Cincinnati. And nobody knows the exact details. I think at the time they kind of admitted it was something to do with play calling in the red zone against the Bengals, a real frustrating day for the Packers offense in general. But you see Rodgers and McCarthy at in each other's face, you know, on the sideline. They were going to, they had to be separated physically by B.J. Raji. So Aaron Rodgers told me, we're having a conversation, a little bit more than a conversation. but
With fists,
right. Not quite, but who knows? It could have got ugly. Now, he said that wasn't really button heads. That was a couple of competitors having a conversation. That happens from time to time when competitors collide. And he said, you know, it's important for both to be themselves. They have very extrovert, competitive personalities. And I thought the interesting quote was, quote, we just have to remember there's two alpha dogs leading the sled, not one. Didn't say there's a power struggle or anything. Mm-hmm. He said McCarthy's 50, he's 30. They're both a little wiser. Interesting dynamic here where you have two, you know, a coach and a quarterback who both kind of call the plays, who both kind of call the shots, who are both very, very competitive. Finding that balance is really important for the Packers, and when they found that balance, the results have been really great.
I mean, their success, you can't really argue against it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've won a Super Bowl together. They went 15-1 in a season. How many times have they made the playoffs in McCarthy's tenure with Rodgers as starting quarterback? They're making it work. Mm-hmm. And you and I played sports. A lot of our listeners played sports. Sometimes you get heated.
A lot of people made that into something that it wasn't. And I remember even after the game, McCarthy was just like, "You know, we're two competitors, and that's going to happen." Yeah. What I think was the interesting comment he made to you was the alpha dog comment.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really interesting. And frankly, an insight that we don't usually get from Rodgers.
Yeah. There's that you have two alpha dogs of balance. Both of these guys are leading the show. And you're right. I think that if you're coaching your quarterback, if your quarterback and your receivers, if they're not yelling at each other when things are going wrong –
yeah.
Then something is wrong. I mean, remember when Aaron Rodgers against Chicago 2012, I believe, when James Jones kind of ran a bad route and Rodgers threw an interception and he barked at Jones right away, got into it. And actually, I think Bob McGinn and I had this conversation on the same podcast and kind of disagreed. I didn't have a problem with it at all. I think that you run a bad route. You might get yelled at. It's football. Guess what? You might be yelled at from time to time, and the quarterback is the leader. He's the one setting the tone. What's so wrong about that?
It's an accountability thing. Good teams have accountability.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who you are. I mean, look at the Giants. Obviously, Eli Manning, not an alpha dog, but Tom Coughlin is a guy who gets red when he drinks coffee. I mean, he's going to let you know how he feels. I don't have any problem whatsoever with the way this team is constructed as far as atmosphere and accountability. I think that's what you have to do to be successful. And how many times do we see teams – look at the Lions. Zero accountability. How many times do they get off to a great start of the year and then they just tailspin?
Right. Jim Schwartz and Matthew Stafford don't exactly have the Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers dynamic. And how
look at the difference between Schwartz and McCarthy. It's unbelievable.
Right.
I mean, McCarthy stands up there after losses and will literally say, we're not going to make excuses. And after the Lions game on Thanksgiving, they got humbled.
Mm-hmm.
You get humbled real quick in the NFL, is what he said. I think the way that they have conducted themselves, I couldn't see it any other way. If Scott Tolzien, very nice guy but very passive, was a starting quarterback on this team, not because of his skill level, but obviously you'd see a much different locker room, I think.
Probably a good problem to have when your quarterback gets to a point in the offense where he can make these calls, make these changes, these audibles at the line with that kind of freedom. And the coach calling the plays is still calling the plays. They both have a level of mastery in the offense where you're going to have these clashes. I think that a lot of teams and quarterbacks probably don't have this problem. But, it is something to watch. I mean,
McCarthy gives him license to do what he's seeing on the field. So as much as the conversation is, well, there's two alpha dogs, I hate to use the term leash because it's consistent, but there is obviously a leash there for McCarthy to Rodgers. There's a level of trust there that allows him to do these things. And we saw it when he went out last year.
Yeah.
Scott Tolzien couldn't make adjustments at the line. Matt Flynn, they had to strict the playbook for him too because he was uncomfortable making adjustments at the line. It just changes everything.
A play was called and they ran the play.
Yeah.
With Scott Tolzien. And Tolzien almost admitted as such to me when we talked a couple weeks ago. That's what they did. Now, you just don't want that relationship and buttonheads to get to a point of when it's destructive. Some pretty interesting comments from Rodgers there, though. All right. One final kind of note, I guess, from this conversation is the future, the team, what he sees here. He sees something different, he says, a different hunger. He thinks all these new faces have kind of brought a different life to the team. We've been around the team, I guess, for just OTAs, rookie camp. From our vantage point, I'm not ready to draw any major conclusions. But
no.
Do you see a different hunger in players in the locker room?
I think it's too early, frankly. Again, I hate to use the basketball thing because this is a football podcast. But, Michael Jordan used to say over the course of their six titles, they needed new faces on that team. They couldn't come into every year with the same faces. You needed new blood. Someone needed to go. Someone new needed to come in. They bring in Dennis Rodman. What happens? They win three more. I think you have to keep bringing in different people. You have to bring in different ideas. And McCarthy has said this, ad nauseum over the offseason with the changes in the coaching staff. New ideas, fresh faces, change it up. I think that's the only way you find innovation and the only way you keep moving forward. You can't just keep doing the same thing. I mean, as far as this particular locker room, it's too early to tell, but I think – the guys will tell you, the company line, that there's a renewed hunger. I think even just looking at a guy like Julius Peppers, if you're a guy on the defense and say, he's on our team, I think you know, that inspires somebody to bring it a little bit because of his pedigree.
That's the value of bringing in a veteran, which Green Bay doesn't do often, is you right. bring somebody in with that resume.
And they lacked it last year.
They did.
They didn't have a defensive veteran. Jermaine right. Williams said so.
They needed it. And that kind of circles back to a comment Rodgers made about motivating teammates. Mm-hmm. He didn't really like that word motivate. He said you can inspire guys, but players have to be self-motivated in the league. And he tells them this. If you're not self-motivated in the league, you're not going to make it. Simple as that. And they need that out of a lot of these first, second, third-year players because, granted, it's still a very young team. To find that self-motivation throughout the locker room because leadership-wise, that Super Bowl team, some of those vocal players, the Charles Woodsons, the Donald Drivers, they're gone. I don't know if there's many, you know, overtly vocal. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, I think, on here. Vocal guys in the locker room.
Yeah.
They need self-motivated players, which the month of November – when Rodgers goes down, let's face it, players didn't really rise to the occasion.
The Super Bowl year was four seasons ago. It's a new NFL. I'm sorry, you know, as cyclical as sports are, mm-hmm. this is not the same NFL in 2010 as it is right now. Right. Look at the guys on the Seattle Seahawks who were not in the league in 2010. Their quarterback, fourth-round pick Super Bowl winner, Richard Sherman, not in the league. Earl Thomas, not in the league. I mean, these are guys who have come up since. It's a different league, and you have to keep moving forward.
You do. You do have to move forward. So let's move forward. OTAs.
Nice job.
That's a transition.
We call that a transition.
All right. Two players, Dan, in OTAs that have stood out to you, with the obvious caveat that they are not in pads.
One of our, colleagues, call it the underwear league MVP,
mm-hmm.
something along those lines. Whatever. I think two of the guys who stood out to me, Richard Rodgers, draft pick this season, tight end, made a lot of eye-opening catches, again, against, I won't say air, but, you know, without pads, no contact. Impressive catches, and even he was very quick to say, like, hey, you know, we got to put pads on first. But he's a guy who stands out to you. He's a big guy. I'm pulling up his measurables here.
Well, and you hit it on the head.
6'4", 260, moves well, got a big body. I mean, you're standing on the sidelines, you can tell. He's a guy who looks like he can hold up pretty well, moves like a wide receiver, catches like a wide receiver, at a position that's become, you know, a premium need with Jermichael Finley no longer on this team. I think he can make a lot of headway once the pads come on.
So the big test for him is when the pads come on to see if he can block, if he can play in line, because this right. is something that he hasn't done since his first year and a half or whatever at Cal.
And we had this conversation last year with fourth-round pick Jonathan Franklin. How great did he look at OTAs and minicamp last year? Then the pads came on, and never heard from him again.
Very true. DJ Williams, a tight end. I mean, you know, one of the most likable guys in that locker room by far, as I'm sure you would attest. But mm-hmm. he looked great at OTAs every year he was here. Mm-hmm. Great first couple weeks of training camp. Something didn't work out. So it's very early. But that being said, I think Richard Rodgers probably has had the best hands at OTAs of any player, rookie, veteran, otherwise. He has shown the best hands, and a couple plays stand out from the last practice we watched. The one in an 11-on-11 segment, I can't remember exactly what the focus was for it, but it was a full team period. And, boy, a pass thrown behind him, I believe it was tipped from Scott Tolzien, reaches back with one arm, the guy blanketed over him, pulls it in, stays on his feet, keeps his balance, keeps going. It was definitely an eye-popper. But the other one, and we were talking about this before we hit record, was, you know, at the end of practice for like 45 minutes, the defense is at one end of the field, the offense is at the other end of the field, they put the pennies on, and everything is kind of half speed, three-quarter speed, they just go through plays. But I think Aaron Rodgers he threw the pass. He was kind of testing Rodgers, just threw him a dart on a play, on a route, and just outstretches an arm and plucks it like it was nothing, like he was on his toes, one hand. Kind of a subtle little play that didn't really mean anything at all, that just shows the natural hands that these coaches keep talking about with him. So
I don't know if you've seen this either, and obviously we've only seen a handful. I've seen – I won't call it an attitude. I've seen a difference in the wide receiver core. Jerry Rice used to catch passes in practice and run to the end zone every time.
Yeah.
Randall Cobb started doing that. And it's very subtle, but I think it sends a nice message. And I think it's going to trickle down to the rest of the wide receiver core.
Yeah, and that is going to be the position battle to watch, where you have 10 guys, and really 9 of those 10 have legitimate chances of making the team. I mean, it's going to be a very difficult decision. One of the players I wanted to mention in this segment, Chris Harper, tweaked his hamstring, didn't practice the last practice, but he's looked really good. And here's a bigger guy. I mean, you stand next to him, you talk to him. His upper body, his torso, really is unlike any of the other wide receivers. He believes he's the strongest receiver on the team and isn't shy about that. And he's somebody that's going to be in the mix as well.
We hear these stories every year, and I think, you know, Harper was on this team for a little bit last year too. You just got to wait till the pads come on.
You do.
It's great to sit here and say, well, this guy looks really impressive, but you have to reserve judgment.
You know, he is a player that was a fourth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Cut by Seattle. Looking back, he had a lot of drops in the preseason. He dropped a 40-yard touchdown in their last preseason game. Gets cut. Picked up by San Francisco. They try to use him as an H-back, a tight end, a receiver. Said it was a bad fit. They cut him. Green Bay picked him up October 18th. And appeared in 4 games. Played 2 offensive plays from scrimmage. A redshirt season. So, on the surface, it seems like he didn't learn anything. Didn't do anything. But I think that in this offense, with what these receivers are asked to do, it's very valuable, and that's why he's a legitimate contender for a roster spot. Now it's a crowded position, so we're gonna see it. You got a lot of guys back. I know they lost James Jones, but Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Jared Boykin, you draft Devontae Adams in the second round. Jared Aberderis has done a few nice things.
Jeff Janis has done some good things.
Jeff Janis. Miles White is in the mix still.
Yep.
Kevin Dorsey. Still on the team, a seventh rounder from last year, Harper, and then Alex Gillette. So that's what you're looking at that position.
Great softball player, Alex Gillette.
Yeah,
really
what about that?
He powered some out there.
He did.
Well, let's stay on the offensive side because I have a story running on NBC 26 coming up pretty soon. Feel free to watch about the running back room. How 2 years
like,
ago?
I like the little.
Well, you have to keep people interested. 2 years ago in 2012, Packers were 20th in the league in rushing. Biggest concern was, well, we need to rush the football more. And Mike McCarthy stood up there at the end of the year and said, you know, I don't sit up there with a clicker and say, well, we ran it once. Well, we passed it once. Well, we ran it again. So that's not how you find balance. You find balance by being productive in the run game, which is true. And I think that's a great way to explain it to the media, who, of course, we are all very savvy. But now, last year, you bring in Eddie Lacy. James Starks, now no longer having to carry the load, can show his burst, his wiggle, had a great year with a limited amount of carries. DeJuan Harris had the cyst on his lung, which you wrote extensively about, wasn't in the lineup, and they were 7th in the league. Now, DeJuan Harris is healthy, James Stark is coming back off a year, he didn't take as much of a beating, and Eddie Lacy has established himself as the starter. 2 years removed from being a terrible run team, frankly, they are now maybe the most secure room on the entire roster. And that's interesting. And we look, they brought John Kuhn back on a 1-year deal. They have Jonathan Franklin, who has a neck injury. Do they keep 5 guys? Because Eddie Lacy, and you wrote an article about this, Eddie Lacy takes a pounding.
Yeah.
And the other day, I asked McCarthy, do you have to ease back in training camp because of the physicality of Eddie Lacy's running style? And he had a great quote. He said, I like to think Eddie Lacy is the one who brings it.
Yeah,
he's not receiving the punishment. He's dealing it out.
I like the phrasing of your question. You said the beating that Eddie Lacy takes.
Right.
And he's like, he puts the beating on.
Right.
And I, you know what? And I think that, let's stay on this topic, where I think with Eddie Lacy and the way he runs and what he does, you just have to maximize that and take Eddie Lacy at his best as long as you can. I don't know how long that is.
You know,
but you just take it.
It's tough because we're talking about another human being.
But yeah.
That's his running style. If you change the way Eddie Lacy runs, he's no longer effective.
That being said, talk to Jerome Bettis about this late last year, and Jamal Anderson, 2 other bigger backs. And Jerome Bettis, he said that his 1993 rookie season with the L.A. Rams, you know, he carried the ball 294 times, but it might as well have been, you know, 600, 700 times. He separated his shoulder. He bruised his sternum. He had a baseball-sized lump on his hip.
Wow.
Because, he took and delivered such a pounding. That was the way he ran out of Notre Dame. And in practice, he had to wear a red jersey just so people wouldn't hit him in practice. So he said he decided that every carry just cannot be life or death. Every carry cannot, you know, it's okay early in a game to maybe step out of bounds, to, you you know, not exactly feast on that contact, and that he played a mind game almost with DBs, and that, you know, early in the game, you know, he might pound him, and then late in the game, you know what, you hop over a guy, you cut, you juke, you do something different. That's a tweak to an overall running style. Jerome Bettis obviously lasted in the NFL a very long time.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because, you know, so much of the conversation about running backs is you want to set the tone early. If you can run a guy over early, he's going to think about it and he's going to keep that in mind. I think that's a really good point. Evolve the way you run over the course of a game. Yeah. Change it up. I mean, it's like you know, the tendency to cover somebody in basketball. You learn their tendencies and you try to adjust. I think that's really interesting because he just takes – and I've said this so many times. Inside Lambo is a show that I contribute to, and I say this to John Mino, who's a big fan, and he says, oh, you're from Philadelphia. You don't care. John, you're wrong. Eddie Lacy takes such a pounding, I legitimately question – you're laughing. I legitimately question how long he can continue to play that way because of how hard he wants. And we see him after games. He stands up. He does the media BS, and when he's done, it takes him forever to get to the showers and do everything.
Yeah.
He's a young man. Obviously, he can probably handle it better than most, but I legitimately worry about his longevity in the league. But
he's got a threshold for pain, though. We know that.
No, we do know that, and that's fine. But, you know, how many carries does he get this year? I mean, do they ease back at all? Let's see. I'm looking up how many carries he had last season.
And this is missing, you know, a game and a half of the concussion.
Right. 284 rushing attempts last year. Now, I know some teams, and this was the case, obviously a different style back, but I think it's something interesting. LeSean McCoy, Eagle player, John Mino, say what you will, literally last season they came into the season, the Philadelphia Eagles did, and said, we have a set number of plays that are designed to end with him out of bounds to keep him from taking such a beating. Now, much smaller guy, I'll say it again. So it's
very different running style.
Different running style. He's more of a slasher. He's also more of a threat out of the backfield. But they design plays to get him out of bounds. Get him touches, let him get a feel, get out of bounds. But these are, you know, 6, 7, 8 yard plays. Is there a way to devise a game plan that gets Eddie Lacy out of bounds so he gets touches but doesn't take contact every time he touches the ball? Because, frankly, it doesn't matter if you rush for 15 yards or -2, you are getting hit on every play. Is there a way to devise a way where that's not always the case? I think that's an interesting thing for the offensive guys to look at.
That's why I like the hire of Sam Gash, who was a fullback himself, you know, headstrong, mashing kind of a guy. I remember him those years in Buffalo in the late 90s, early 2000s. But he blocked for Curtis Martin for a while, blocked for Jamal Lewis. You know, these are Jamal Lewis especially, a bigger back, similar kind of running style. He can relate to Eddie Lacy. And you see him during OTA practices. I mean, every practice we've seen for a long stretch, every practice, Lacy and Gash are on the sideline talking to each other. I think that there's a lot of knowledge that can kind of be spread to Lacy from Gash's experiences. And then Alex Van Pelt obviously did a great job as the running backs coach. And what he got out of all those players last year is huge, and now he's onto the quarterbacks. Gash, a teammate of Van Pelt in Buffalo, actually, he can give Lacy a different perspective of he was there in the trenches at that same position. I think that can help with everything we're talking about here. Now, real quickly, let's talk about the two other guys, James Starks, Juwan Harris, and Jonathan Franklin. Franklin is kind of a mystery right now. Has the neck injury. McCarthy doesn't have to tell us about injuries right now under the CBA. Jonathan Franklin has not been in the locker room.
No.
I think, you know, a lot of us have tried to find out information on this. We have not gotten information. He's there physically at practice on the sideline. We don't know his situation.
Mm-hmm.
Starks, they paid him to be a contributor as a free agent. Had the visit with the Pittsburgh Steelers lined up. They re-signed him. Pretty good money for a running back, too. He's going to have a type of role in this offense.
Yeah, I don't envision any way that he doesn't. Just putting a cap on Lacy, 284 carries last year, was fifth in the league. He had 21 more against the Niners for a round total of 305. A lot of carries
for
1 year. But, yeah, I mean, you look at the way that they've constructed this running back room. Talked to Juwan Harris the other day. He went from being Mike McCarthy's guy last year, and now a year later he had the cyst on the lung. Now he's fighting for a job. And I asked him, what does that feel like? And he said, back to square one, which I think's true, but also interesting. A guy who was a used car salesman, he comes up, he establishes himself against the Vikings in the playoffs 2 years ago. Now he's the guy, and it's just the nature of the NFL beast. Now he doesn't know if he's going to be on the roster. I mean, Jonathan Franklin, do they keep Jonathan Franklin? You're not going to get rid of John Kuhn. Do you really want five running backs? Do you pup Jonathan Franklin? See what happens. I think all of a sudden there's just so much depth, and Franklin, frankly, hasn't shown it. I don't know, and this goes into another discussion about, well, he was just picked last year. Packers have a great track record of fourth-round picks. We were talking about it prior to us hitting record. Here are the fourth-round picks just in the last couple of years. Since 2008, Bakhtiari started every game last year. Mike Daniels, huge second year. Franklin, Chris Harper, who was drafted from Seattle. Devon House, big-time contributor on defense for the most part. T.J. Lang, Josh Sitton, J.C. Treader, three, your entire interior offensive line, fourth-round guys. I don't know if there's a place on the team for Jonathan Franklin. But if I'm Ted Thompson, do I keep him around because of the track record that you've established?
Whenever he does return, he's got a lot of catching up to do because DeJuan Harris has looked really good from what we've seen in the OTA practices. We both talked to him. He says that burst, that explosion in his knee is back. He's been running for a while now. He took a little short pass. It was like a left screen the last practice. And yeah, I mean, yeah, they're not in pads, but you could see that second gear in him. It kind of looked like the player that we saw a year and a half ago or so. I think that Harris is intriguing because he's so different. All three of those backs are so different. We talked about Lacy, his running style. James Starks, a 6'2", a taller guy, who, you know, has that, you know, that Euro step almost on the basketball court that he can kind of dip his shoulder and provide a certain running style. Dwight Harris is 5'7". You know, he's a kind of more of a little firecracker.
Damon Stoudemire, little Mighty Mouse.
There you go. So what Harris said is, quote, the defense is not going to know what's going to hit him. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see how much damage we can do. And Sam Gash kind of characterized his running style as more shifty, good balance, good explosion. Can use him on inside zones, some draws, some counters, that kind of stuff. You know, Franklin, he showed some things in that Cincinnati game before the fumble.
Mm-hmm.
But Harris is the one who's healthy. He's the one that's out there. I think right now the combination of those three backs has to be pretty intriguing to Green Bay.
I think, and even if they don't get the production they want out of the wide receiving core, this younger wide receiving core, I think they can actually lean on the run a little more.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens. But.
Definitely, definitely. Well, let's get to some questions. What do you say on the old tweet machine? Although, I'm looking back here, we kind of got off topic. OTAs, you wanted to mention one more player. We're going to talk about a couple guys each. But
okay.
Sean Richardson is another guy who stood out.
Super intriguing guy. Sean Richardson is, I think, a possible playmaker. Why? And I think the Packers agree, because why else would they have held on to him for this long? He's got such a huge combination of size and strength. Let's see, he's listed at 6'2", I believe, 6'2", 216, but he looks a lot bigger. Obviously, he had the fusion surgery in the neck. He played on special teams last year. Had a couple downs down in the box against the run last year as well. He's made a couple plays in OTAs. Picked off Rodgers one time. Almost picked him off last week. He's just a super intriguing guy. He's got the back end speed. He's got the physicality. And as good as he looks in OTAs, he's probably going to look better in pads because that's the way he plays. I think, you know, everyone talks about, you know, the battle for the safety position opposite Morgan Burnett. Burnett did not play well last year. And yeah, he's got the money, so he's probably going to sign because they're not going to sign a guy to sit. But I think Richardson can push him. I think on the other side, Clinton Dix and Micah Hyde is going to be a great race. I think the safety position is one of the more intriguing on the team. And we're not just talking about opposite of Burnett anymore.
Richardson's going to be interesting because, yeah, when the pads come on, he's going to look better. When they used him last year, obviously missed 10.5 months after the surgery, comes back in mid-November. They're pretty desperate on defense, looking for anything at all, really. And so when he was out there, he was kind of another linebacker. And I can think back to the Atlanta game. He was a physical presence near the line, made a couple stops there. They didn't really put him in positions on the back end in space, so you don't really know exactly how he's going to cover, how he's going to move. That was the knock on him out of Vanderbilt. He was a box safety at Vanderbilt. There was a play at Dallas. I think he got beat, and Tony Romo overthrew Des Bryant, whoever it was.
that's where they really need to see him in training camp. I think put him in those positions. All right, he's said repeatedly, I'm more than a box safety. I'm more than a box safety. All right, prove it this summer in camp. They have to put him in those positions in space. That's when we find out if Sean Richardson is a realistic option.
I think that's so interesting because this team struggled so heavily to stop the run.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a box safety. I mean, he doesn't want to be characterized as that, and that's fine. But, I mean, why not? They brought him in a handful of times. Why not bring him in to see if you could plug up some of those holes?
I think that was at safety. Maybe that was the problem. They want interchangeable guys. Mm-hmm. And whoever was with Morgan Burnett, they couldn't be interchangeable because Jennings, granted, he put on some weight in a couple of years and his tackling improved, still was not up to par of being an NFL starter, which is what he was forced to be. Jerron McMillan was cut by December. Whoever was with Morgan Burnett, they couldn't get very flexible with the two safeties. So I think they want Burnett and HaHa Clinton-Dix to be those two, even though Micah Hyde's out there starting. And you know, that's probably more to get him acclimated at the position as much as anything. But yeah, I think come training camp, Richardson is a guy to watch because he has done some good things.
I think Hyde has done pretty well just in covering. I think you can get a pretty decent read as far as covering when you're not wearing pads.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's done pretty well. Just watching him, I don't think it's going to be as much of a struggle to transition as maybe some other people thought for him.
One to round up our 2-2 players to watch in OTAs, just want to mention real quick Scott Tolzien. You know, we talked earlier about that inability to really change things at the line of scrimmage and the knowledge of the offense. I mean, the guy was signed the 11th hour for the season and then thrown into that situation. Pretty admirable, the game he had against the Giants, all those deep completions, worked well off play action. But this is when he really has to pick up the offense and get to a point where he can make adjustments and he has that mastery. We talked at length a little bit about this a couple weeks ago, and he says he thinks he's getting to that point, and he's going to push for Matt Flynn. That number two job, very different look at that
this
competition
year.
This summer than last summer.
Said he worked a lot on his footwork, a lot of his mechanics. I just don't see the accuracy that Flynn has. Obviously, he's got a rocket arm. He's got a much better arm than Flynn, but mm-hmm. You know, if you can't put it there, it does you no good. I think the race for the back quarterback position is going to be interesting. And that's something else McCarthy talked about. I asked him, what do you look for when you have a guy who's established in front of everybody else, like mm-hmm. a Lacy or a Rodgers, what do you look for in the backup guy to solidify that position? And really, it comes down to execution.
Yeah.
So maybe if it's know-how, maybe that's something he's not leading on. But if you can go out there and do it, you're going to play.
You know, when Matt Flynn came in and those comebacks against Atlanta and Dallas, the offense was moving. He was making some changes, and the tempo was up, and you could see that his knowledge of the offense was there. If Tolzien can get to that point, he's got the better arm. Mm-hmm. He's got the better measurables and all of that. He's younger. I think that, yeah, he could be your option, but that's a big if, because right now you know what you have in Matt Flynn.
Yeah.
All right, rapid fire, Twitter questions. Let's get after it. This one from Luke Rundle, at True Luke Rundle on Twitter. He asks, what are your thoughts on Colt Lyerla's progress? I've heard he's consistently been the last guy to leave on the field every day. All right, Luke.
The television folk are kicked out earlier than the newspaper folk, so I will defer to you.
Well, I mean, we've seen a handful of practices. We're not there every OTA, and he wasn't in attendance for one of them for whatever reason. Mike McCarthy said he knew where he was. They're voluntary. Yeah, I guess overall, I mean, you can see the size, speed, athleticism, combination. He's made a handful of plays. The first practice, the one that stands out, was that kind of high catch over in the middle. Remains to be seen. You know, I think that he's still kind of more of the long shot at the position. It's a very crowded, uncertain, up-for-grabs position. Andrew Corliss still hurt, not participating.
Mm-hmm.
You have Brandon Bostic. He returned from his foot surgery for the first time at the last OTA practice we saw. Ryan Taylor, Jake Stoneburner, Richard Rodgers has been the most impressive, at least in this setting. A lot to be determined there. I think that we talked about this last time. Lyerla, probably a chance, probably a risk worth taking because of the potential there for now.
Yeah, I think it's too early to call. I mean, that tight end position's tough because it's such a physical position.
Yeah.
And you really don't know what they put the pads on. And as far as his progression, I mean, he says he's in the playbook a lot. I don't know if there's too much light you can really shed on that one.
This one from Duncan Gill Any idea how Ha-Ha Clinton Dix is coming on? Hyde's still with the ones. More significant than just giving him time in the position. I think it is them giving him time in the position. If Alex Green was the starting running back in OTAs last year. He was cut in the preseason.
Yeah.
I still think that, you know, Clinton Dix is...
You still think it's a waiting in the wings sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a team cliche trying to make a player earn it, you know, blah, blah. He's a first-round pick out of Alabama. That was a position that was hurting last year. They want Clinton Dix to start.
I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, similar situation to Lacey last year. I think Micah Hyde is the switchblade kind of guy, like the swing guy on the offensive line. I think Micah Hyde is, you know, being groomed to play the safety position, play the inside slot corner position. I think he's going to guy you're going to be seeing being moved around a great deal.
Yeah, I mean, if he's a super sub of sorts, I think that would be ideal for Green Bay because this is a team that hasn't really stayed healthy.
Right.
Whether it is at nickel corner behind Casey Hayward, at safety behind a Burnett and Clinton Dix, you're probably going to see my guy at some point.
Yeah.
And this one, before you get a round ball rock queued up, which I hope is queued up.
Oh, it's queued.
It's queued?
This is my first go-around. I was not given full autonomy for the music after my cries for Phil Collins were never listened to, but I had to settle on this, so I'm doing my best to make sure that I'm ready to go.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to give you some music freedom, and then we got talking basketball. I'm like, no, you know what?
This is how it works when you're second bill.
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly.
I'm the character actor. You're the one who's bringing them all in.
James Childress at NateJackson25, a good friend on the old tweet machine. This is a great question. This is a good way to cap this podcast, Dan. Isn't Boris Diaw's Spursification the most amazing thing in sports history? He is somehow morphed into a fat Larry Bird. I think it's probably, maybe not just sports history, I'd go American history.
Oh, God.
He ate his way out of the NBA. He was eating too many croissants in France.
It's true. I think it's so funny. I mean, people say the Spurs are boring. They score like the most points in the NBA. Like, no. They're not boring. I saw a great Pop quote yesterday that was like, "We don't care who you are. Like, if you're not going to come in here and play our way, you're going to be gone. Like, we don't care who you are."
You know what?
That's great.
When we're done with this, I'm going to call my dad because I've been trying to get him to watch the NBA for years. And he always says, there's no team ball. I want bounce passes and hook shots.
Fundamental bounce
passes. It's like a hot potato. It's this beautiful to watch. It's a thing of beauty. And Boris Diaw is the fulcrum of it all.
That behind-the-back pass last night to a wide-open Tim Duncan who just lays it in is just the perfect personification of what they want to do. And then you watch Dwayne Wade. We actually were watching the game at one of the local establishments.
Yes.
And we had a conversation about when LeBron and Bosh aren't in there and it's just Dwayne Wade. It's hero ball. It's 1-on-5. If he hits one of his little runners in the lane where he Euro steps, no one else is seeing that basketball. Unless it's, I picked up my dribble, I'll pass you quick, like back to me, and then I'll just start.
Well, he wants to explode and be the player he once was, and then he just backs up and shoots a fadeaway 17-footer. Dwayne Wade doesn't really play any defense, a pretty bad player.
Spurs, your 2014 champions. Interesting question to wrap this up on. Who do you think is the better team in the last 2 years? The Heat? The Spurs took the Heat to 7, and then this year they come back and they're blowing them out.
San Antonio.
San Antonio.
You know what, though? I don't know when people are listening to this. Watch. By the time they listen to this, the Heat have come back out of their 3-1 hole.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
3 out of 4 blowouts. I think it's done.
All right. Cue it up.
John Tesh time.
Thanks a lot, everybody. That'll do it for us.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.